The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Hi, everybody. Rachel Lindsay from the Buffalo News. Cover the Buffalo Sabres for the news. I am here with my coworker, news hockey columnist Mike Harrington, who is live on the scene in Boston. I flew in fresh off the plane, getting ready to cover the Sabres tomorrow night for their second game in a month against the Bruins. So, Mike, how's Boston? How was the trip in?
It's a little bit like Buffalo. It's cloudy, drizzly, chilly. We're getting to hockey weather here, but I've already, taken a quick walk and paid homage to the Bobby Orr statue outside TD Garden to get ready for tomorrow. And yeah, the Sabres have a little revenge here. That 16-1 shot differential, the first time they played the Bruins here a couple weeks ago, has to be fresh in their mind.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things that I know we're going to talk about today is how the Sabres are going to get off to these faster starts, particularly after last night's 4-3 overtime loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, the first 15 minutes of the game, the Sabres only put two shots on goal and on Columbus goalie Jed Greaves, and you're kind of scratching your head. You're getting a little bit of those flashbacks from the Boston game. Even I thought that. I said, God, they got to pick this up. They got to do something. It's one of the things I talked to you today about the guys in the locker room. I said, what's one of these things you have to do? What'd you learn about yourselves in the first 10 games? What do you have to do in the next 10 games to really kind of continue to bring that picture together? And that was one of the things they said. They said, we have to drive to the net. We have to create more traffic in front of the net. We have to get off to a fast start. And the Sabres didn't do that last night. They rallied in the second period, in the sense that they made up for lost time, lost space, lost shot opportunities, and they led in the third period before losing 4-3 in overtime on Mosswood's goal in 3-on-3 play, off that pass where a guy was uncovered in front of the net. One of the things I was really surprised about last night after the game, Lindy Ruff's demeanor. I even turned to you and I said, I thought Lindy would be a little more, unhappy after seeing his team lose in overtime and squander back-to-back third period leads. But Lindy was surprisingly upbeat. Me personally, because I think he likes the character of this year's team a little more and how they responded. Mike, what was your response when you saw, Lindy Ruff, an upbeat Lindy Ruff after a 4-3 overtime loss?
Well, I think it was twofold, really. He did say the start of the game, and used the word unacceptable. He said the 6:45 start, they acted like it was a 7:18 start, he said. And when you get outshot 14-1 at the start of the game, it's clearly unacceptable. But I think what he saw here from this club is the ability to bounce back, the ability to turn the game around. That fourth line got the game turned around at the end of the first period. And the shots were once 14-1 at one point in the third period. Since that point, the shots were 30-11 in the Sabres' favor. So they really turned that game around. They really started to grab control of that game. Now, Lindy wasn't happy about another blown lead in the third period. The Toronto blown lead was a flubbed shot by Ukko-Pekka-Luukkonen. The game against Columbus, it was a midair tip-in. Not anything Alex Lyon could have done on the play. They didn't really guard the point real well. And then overtime, again, they had their chance. Yuri Kulik has a breakaway. You got to put that in. But I think Lindy liked two things. He liked what he saw in those 40 to 45 really good minutes. And I think he liked the fact that they were able to get that game turned around. And they turned that game around even before they went in the locker room for intermission to get a one-way conversation from the coach. They got that game turned around before Lindy really had a lot to say. And I think that in the back of his mind, he had to really like. He doesn't like the result, obviously, but there was a lot within that game to like.
Yeah, again, I think he likes the character of the team. One of the things is that he said that really stuck out to me during his post-game press conference. He said, the way the team responded, how the slow start and then picking up the pace in the second period, taking the lead in the third period on Josh Dunn's goal. One of the things he said, that's something we didn't see a lot of last season. Last season is still very clear to Lindy Ruff. You got a few new guys in the mix, including Josh Dunn, who we'll talk about. They got the return of Michael Kesselring, a big physical body who can contribute the offensive chance. But again, the makeup of the team it's sitting a lot better with Lindy. And now that they're through these first 10 games, including what, 6 of the last 7, 7 of the last 8 against Atlantic Division opponents, you've got their last one in the stretch coming up. If they can walk out of here with 12 points in that stretch, not bad, it's not a bad way to start.
No, and they're certainly right in the mix. I think there's, six teams in the Atlantic Division, I think, that have 10 or 11 points right now. But we saw this even under Don Granato. Whatever team you got from the Sabres off the opening faceoff and through the first 5 minutes often was the team you got most of the night, whether it was good or bad. They struggled turning games around off these slow starts. It was a huge problem with Granato 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Last year, certainly, they led the league in first period goals, and they haven't been as good in the first period this year. They've been better in the second period, which was a real bugaboo last year. But I think Lindy liked the fact that this team stayed with it. You know, another thing that happened, Alex Lyon made two or three good saves in the first period. They were down 1-0. It wasn't 3-0. Too often in the last couple of years, you get a bad start, it's 3-0, and you're chasing the game all night. They really weren't chasing that game when it's only 1-0 at the first intermission.
Now, and one of the things the players talked about, the players I talked to this afternoon in the locker room before they went to Boston, they said, they can't afford sluggish starts. He said, we have to come out quick. We have to establish ourselves. Even if we're not getting the chances, we have to buzz and buzz and buzz. Another thing they said, and we're going to segue into our next point, is
don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
This is a team, they said they have to be better at creating traffic in front of the opposing goal and in front of the opposing goaltender. We're starting to see that. We're starting to see them break through teams that pushed them to the outside, to the perimeter of the zone. And we're starting to drive in. We have guys like, Josh Doan, fired over the summer from Utah. Jason Zucker, who's finally starting to find his presence in front of the net. And even that fourth line of Peyton Krebs, Beck Malenstein, and Josh Dunn. They were the ones creating a lot of opportunities early in the third period. Not just creating a lot of scoring opportunities, they got under Columbus' skin early in the third period to kind of get them rattled a little bit.
Well, and I had a couple people on X who said to me, boy, it seemed like the fourth line was on the ice a lot in that game. Well, they were, because Lindy Ruff was awarding those guys with ice time. Peyton Krebs, Josh Dunn, Beck Malenstein, they were creating a lot of chaos down low.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we haven't seen a lot from this team. But what we're seeing this year, we are seeing, those dirty goals, they like to say, that big hockey term, get dirty goals. This team really didn't get dirty goals very often the last couple of years. It's not really their style, some of these guys. Well, these guys are driving to the net a lot more. We're seeing, like you mentioned, Zucker. Doan is a huge addition to drive to the net, be physical down low, be in control of the puck. Dunn had a great game last night. And you're seeing different guys. How many times in the last two or three games has Jack Quinn gone to the net?
Mm-hmm.
Much more than we've seen in the past. That's a key point to get goals. And a lot of times you're not going to get pretty plays and you're not going to get shots from the circle. This is the NHL. Goalies aren't going to give up too many of those. They're getting to the net. They're getting down low. They're creating a lot of shots. They're creating a lot of traffic. They're in the goalie's lap. And it makes a huge difference. And that's a way they've started to drive offense after they only scored two goals in the first three games. There's been a lot more offense, so almost four goals a game since then.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that Natural Stat Trick calls these, high danger scoring chances. People always ask me, they're like, what is a high danger scoring chance? What is a, what's a high percentage scoring chance? If high danger scoring chances are shots and shot opportunities that come in the area directly in front of the opposing goalie, whether it's in the slot, between the circles, and within 30 feet of the goal. I mean, you have to look at it kind of how many times is a a slap shot from the point going to score a goal versus a second and third opportunity when you're swinging at a goalie right in front of the crease. I said to you at the beginning of the season, I said, Mike, does this team have a guy or guys that can just camp out in front of the net and create those chances, whether it's tipping in one of those blasts from the point or taking a second, third, fourth hack at the puck as a goalie's trying to think? And what did you say to me, Mike? You said, it isn't necessarily in this team's DNA to have that. I grew up watching, as I'm dating myself, I remember a guy named Tim Kerr who played for the Philadelphia Flyers in the late 80s. He was a big body dude, probably would have been a defensive end had he played football. He may have been a defensive end, but he would just stand in front of the opposing goalie and cherry pick those long shots, you know, those low percentage scoring chances and make them into high percentage scoring chances. Now let's fast forward about 25 or so years. I look at a guy who played for the Pittsburgh Penguins, played for the Florida Panthers, named Patrick Hornquist. He was the same way, but he was more athletic. You couldn't push him out of the way. And he always, you know, he was even arms, legs, hands, feet, mouth, just moving in front of the goalie for the Penguins and then for the Panthers to create, you know, more of those down low, high percentage scoring chances as well, too. And Natural Stat Trick also had an interesting stat today. The Sabres have what are they called 90 high danger scoring chances in 5-on-5 play in their first 10 games, which sounds good. But you know, I looked this up, and you know, thank you again, Natural Stat Trick. This is an overall, they get the primary assist here. Colorado has 135 high danger scoring chances. That happens when you have a guy like Nathan MacKinnon on your team who isn't afraid to create, you know, those chances in front of the net, or a guy like Cale Makar who pushes up from the defense to do that. Pittsburgh, the surprise team in the NHL right now, we've got 134 high danger scoring chances, you know, in 5-on-5 play. The Rangers have 122, and I'd seen the Sabres have, I think it was only, you know, I think it's, they have 12 goals in 5-on-5 scoring, high danger scoring chances. Ottawa leads the league with 16 as well. So it's interesting to see that, and it's interesting to see, you know, see those numbers, but then also have them say, all right, you need to do more of this and get more scoring chances as well. Another thing we were talking about this morning while you were on your flight to Boston, the Sabres need to stop passing the puck so much. Take a few more shots, why not? Last night I noticed they took one too many shots, maybe about three or four too many times. So, you know, I mean, or passes, I should say. That's my mistake. They pass the puck one too many times, and, you know, one too many passes, that's one less goal, you know, one less shot chance you have.
And I think we've seen that from time to time, certain guys. Even you go back to the overtime in Toronto, they overpassed themselves into a loss, where after Quinn and Thompson, you know, went awry, power couldn't corral the puck, it went the other way. You know, but the high danger chances are interesting to me because this team has to generate more, and sometimes numbers can lie. And the New York Rangers can't put the puck in the net to save their lives this year, no matter how many high danger chances they have, especially at home.
And so, I thought that too. I was I thought, God, that's great that they're, you know, scoring down low, but it can't win games. It's not helping them win games.
Well, the people will say that they're shooting at a low percentage, and eventually that's not sustainable. It will turn around. Mm-hmm. And maybe it will. I mean, the team basically had no goals at home for the first three games of the season. Yeah. So I do think the one thing we're learning here with this topic is how impactful Josh Doan has been in these first 10 games. When the trade was basically all about Michael Kesselring coming in, being a top four defenseman, probably playing with Owen Power. But we learned Kevin Adams would not make the trade unless Josh Doan is included. Bill Armstrong, the GM of Utah, did not want to do that. He finally had to cave. Josh Doan came over here, and so far, he's been a terrific addition. And now you look at it, if Kesselring is as advertised, that's a trade both teams can love. J.J. Paterka, last I looked, is +9 for Utah, which is un-J.J. Paterka-like, just for the record. But why can't both teams be happy? Paterka's on Utah's second line. Doan has been a big offensive force for Buffalo down low. Kesselring, we saw a lot in his first game against Columbus. He had 9 shot attempts. He was physical. You know, he skated well. His breakouts were great. So we're going to see more of that when he gets more comfortable. Why can't both teams be happy?
Right. You know, I don't think it's that people underestimated Josh Doan at all. They just didn't really know what to expect from him.
No.
As well, too. I mean, you know, I'd written about him earlier this season. You know, what's the first thing you think when you hear the name Josh Doan? You think Shane Doan, Mr. Arizona Hockey, who's now what, special assistant to the general manager in Toronto. I've seen him in a couple Sabres games, saw him in Toronto and whatnot. But it's one nice thing. And then Josh Doan, he's young enough. He's discovering his identity. He's discovering his niche as well. He's not afraid to go in as well. Sometimes some players at that age and with that little experience, they're hesitant to make those big moves and go against some veteran goalies, but not Josh Doan. He has taken full grasp and embraced his role on this team. Jason Zucker also had to take on that role. For him, it's a little bit more about timing. I noticed in the preseason, he you know, not that he wasn't hesitant, he went full bore to the goal. The timing just wasn't there. He couldn't put a stick in the right place, or he was maybe about a quarter second off from one of those passes, redirecting a pass and whatnot as well. But he's starting to find his timing. And even just, not even the shots on goal, just being around the goal and distracting the goalie, it can make a difference.
It does. And I think that's something we've seen from this club, and it needed to change. I think it's helped on the power play. Guys are going to the net. Doan has been a factor on the power play. All of a sudden, your power play's in the top 10 to 12 in the league. And really, the story of the season so far, in a lot of ways, has been what's gone on in front of the opposing net and what's gone on in the Buffalo net. It's kind of each end has been a huge story. It almost gives us a good segue here. I want to hear your thoughts on the other end of the ice at the net as well, because it's crazy what's going on with this team right now.
You mean the three-goalie problem?
It's a good problem.
Lindy Ruff said it's a good problem to have. You know, numbers alone, I agree. I saw, but they're only one of, what, six or seven NHL teams that are carrying three goalies on the roster. You know, when they announced, we're going to carry three goalies as well. I think this is a multi-faceted approach for the Sabres. One, you need an insurance policy if someone gets hurt, which is very likely. I mean, nobody expected UPL to miss part of training camp with a lower body injury he sustained in the preseason. Two, nobody expected UPL to miss the start of the season with another lower body injury he sustained against Pittsburgh in one period of a preseason game. Three, you know, nobody expected Alex Lyon to be the starter opening night. And Alex Lyon was brought in, I've said this before, he's brought in to be a durable number two backup, but is quickly making his money because he's proving he can take on any role they show him. The other reason I think this is a good thing to do strategically, I'd even bounce this off of you, is that, Mike, I just want to make sure, Colm Ellis has to clear waivers if the Sabres decide to cut him. And if, for some reason, whatever reason, I don't see this happening anytime soon, if the Sabres were to put him on waivers, the St. Louis Blues can immediately go back and reclaim him. And that would leave the Sabres with two goalies on the roster. They might want to sell with two goalies, which Lindy said he prefers. Or they might have to rush Devin Levi up the flagpole if they don't feel comfortable with that two-goalie problem as opposed to three as well, too. I think Colton Ellis acquitted himself very well against Detroit. And then he had the back tightness, which nobody expected, hence the need for three goalies. You know, Colton Ellis is on the shelf for a game. I think Alex Lyon, I say give the keys to Alex Lyon right now. You'd mentioned that fourth goal that UPL gave up against Toronto Saturday up at Scotiabank Arena. I didn't like how he played that puck as well. And even he said after the game, this was a very frustrating start for me. You know, he admitted that as much. You know, there's still some things. I don't think they need to shake UPL's confidence. I think they need to build it back up. But they can do this knowing they've got Alex Lyon, who's taken the same role that James Reimer took last year.
Well, this is such a multi-layered situation here. Okay, the first thing is UPL is the one with the big money contract. So he's supposed to be the number one goalie. That's how this is supposed to go. Alex Lyon is supposed to be the number two goalie. He's playing like the number one. You can't shake him out of the crease now. Mm-mm. All of a sudden, you claim another goalie on waivers, another prospect goalie. And people around the league are very high on Colton Ellis, and the Sabres were following. They knew that he might be available because of who St. Louis has in Jordan Binnington and Joel Hofer. So they claim another prospect goalie while they have Devin Levi in Rochester. And they continue to tell Devin Levi and tell us they're high on Devin Levi. And I believe them. And they want Levi to play a lot of games. But now you run Lucan into Rochester on conditioning for one game. That's what I didn't understand. I was stunned when they called Lukanen up after one game in the AHL, when his preseason had consisted of one period. I expected Lukanen to be down there two or three games. So you bring him up. You didn't have, and people have to realize, they did not intend to play Lukanen in Toronto. He didn't find out until the morning of the game he was playing because of Ellis's back problem. I get all that. He didn't play great. He was okay until the end of the game. And now what do you do? You're not sending him back to Rochester. You've called him up. I don't know what you're going to do with the goalies here. in Boston and against Washington. At some point, you want to give Ellis a shot. I mean, I was thrilled. I thought it was a great story to see Ellis's debut in that. It's one game. The league is riddled with histories of goalies having a great game in their career. Now, essentially, you really have not three goalies. You have four goalies. Because I count Levi in this equation. Because if they didn't have Colton Ellis, they would have called Levi to potentially be up with them at some point while Lukanen was on his conditioning stint because they got Georgiev down in Rochester.
Yeah.
So it's really a dicey situation here. I don't know how they're going to maintain this. They can't maintain three goalies at the NHL level.
No.
I don't know how they're going to maintain Levi in Rochester with Georgiev. You know, and you wonder what Levi has to say about, you know, claiming a prospect goalie and putting him in the NHL. That's not something Levi, you know, would have expected. He understood he was going to be in Rochester. You're our guy. Now all of a sudden you claim another prospect goalie. So this has to shake out here. And ultimately, you know, you do wonder at some point if they have other teams inquire about Lukanen's status, even with that contract, and they may look another direction. Because I don't necessarily think Lindy Ruff has the biggest amount of confidence in Lukanen here right now. And Lindy Ruff, I can tell you, has made a career out of riding his number one goalie and feeling confident in him. Lindy Ruff feels confident in Alex Lyon right now, not in Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. And nothing that happened in Toronto is going to change that opinion.
Right. And there's a reason Lindy Ruff's getting paid the big bucks to coach this team. But if I'm Lindy Ruff, you have to stick with Alex Lyon. There's no question, no hesitation, no debate to this.
You know,
I think with Luukkonen, keep him around. He's got to work on the psychological part of his game as well, too.
It's hard to have a $4.75 million backup goalie. Mm-hmm. That's a situation right there, we call it, in terms of front office analysis of their team. We have a $4.75 million backup goalie. That wasn't the intention, and it'll be interesting to see how much that plays into the whole thing as well, because people say, what are they doing calling Luukkonen backup, putting him in there? I'm like, they got 4.75 million reasons why they're calling Luukkonen backup. Now, they didn't intend to play him, as we said, but he was going to play soon enough. If he didn't play in Toronto, he was going to play against Columbus, or it was going to be soon. And now we have to see when they get Ellis back in.
Right, right. All right, so the Sabres play 7 p.m. Thursday at Boston, then return home to host Washington. Let's talk about these next two games. Let's start with the Boston game. You know, Boston's, you know, they're one of three teams tied, you know, as of today, tied for sixth in the Atlantic with Buffalo and Tampa Bay with 10 points. Boston's a team, had high expectations for them, you know, with Jeremy Swayman, one of the best goalies in the league, but they've lost seven of their last 10 games. They've got a -5 goal differential, and they're just a team that, even though they have a new coach in Marco Sturm, what is their identity? Who are the Boston Bruins? Are they Jeremy Swayman and everybody else? Are they, yes, you know, a team in transition? Are they Marco Sturm and everybody else? What kind of team are the Sabres going to face when they see Boston tomorrow night?
I think the Bruins, the old Dennis Green line, they are who we thought they are. When they started 3-0, people were a little, wow, what's this? They're 3-0. Then they, what did they lose? 6 in a row, 7 in a row. The Boston Bruins are not good. They're not going to be good. They should be the last place team in the Atlantic Division, and they should be the last place team in the Atlantic Division all season. They're definitely, like you said, in transition. You still have David Pastrnak. You still have Charlie McAvoy. Jeremy Swayman, which Jeremy Swayman are you going to get? So far, you've had good Jeremy Swayman, not last year Jeremy Swayman. They're definitely in transition. There are other teams well ahead of where they are in terms of building. You know, Marchand is gone. Bergeron's retired. Chara's retired. That whole group. Pastrnak is still around. McAvoy's still here. The Bruins are not good, and the Sabres did not play well in the first meeting with the Bruins. First period was abhorrent, a terrible first period. I hope that's the worst first period the Sabres play all year that they played 2 weeks ago in Boston. And I think you're going to see a much better performance knowing that. The Bruins, also that game, they were kind of on their opening season high, so to speak. Hey, we're okay. We're not bad. Mm-hmm. We don't stink. Well, now I think they stink. And I think they're going to start playing more like the team that people thought they would play. And it goes back to the opening topic. Jump on these guys early, and the fans will jump on them, just for the record, you know, in TD Garden. It can be a hostile crowd for the visitors. It can be a hostile crowd for the home side as well in Boston. So yeah, that's going to be a real...
It's boisterous.
Yeah, that's going to be a real key to me, is get on these guys early, because they're supposed to be the last place team in the division. You need to make them look like it.
There was a term that Elliot Friedman used on 32 Thoughts, seeing Kyle Bukowski. It's called games against teams, you know, like this, the empty calorie games. You know, you're not going to get a lot of nutritional value on them. You're going to pad your stats. You're going to walk away fooled up. But, you know, it's not the same kind of win as a team against Colorado, but it's a win nonetheless. You put it away and you move on. So you go from Boston to Washington on Saturday. Alex Ovechkin is at number 899 for career goals. This could be a landmark day. Washington plays Friday against the New York Islanders, so it could happen sooner, but everybody's getting ready for Alex Ovechkin to reach this milestone. I mean, well, what happens if Alex Ovechkin scores number 900 against the Sabres?
Well, the bench will clear, sort of like we saw last year in Pittsburgh when Malkin got 500. I'm sure the Capitals have the league dispensation to clear the bench for number 900. It's not the hype and the following that it got when he was breaking Wayne Gretzky's record at the end of last season, which he did against the Islanders. It's not that, but it is a historic milestone. No one in the history of the league has ever got to 900. What have we seen? We saw Austin Matthews' 60th goal for the Leafs a couple years ago. I think back, you know, historic goals against the Sabres. Malkin and LA's Luke Robitaille are the only guys to get 500 against the Sabres. I don't think anybody's got higher than 500. And, of course, the big one was, you know, in 1982 when Wayne Gretzky scored his 77th goal of the season to break Phil Esposito's record in Memorial Auditorium. That was probably the most iconic goal scored against the Sabres in a regular season game. And that was certainly a record that had stood for only a dozen years, but it was the talk of hockey, and certainly Ovechkin was the talk of hockey last season. He does not play that well historically against the Sabres in KeyBank Center. He hasn't done a lot over the years here. So it'll be interesting to see on their back-to-back, if he doesn't score against the Islanders, they got shut out Tuesday night by Dallas, how Ovechkin does. And the Capitals, I never bought into the Capitals last year. As good a regular season as they had, part of it, I think, they were riding the Ovechkin wave. And yeah. I never bought into them. They didn't do much in the playoffs, as it turned out. And this year, to me, that division, New Jersey and Carolina, head and shoulders above everybody else, and Pittsburgh, the huge surprise. So the Capitals are kind of mired in the muck with everybody else here. And it's always an interesting game to see Ovechkin, to see what kind of lunacy Tom Wilson causes. But all the backdrop is going to be, if the Ovechkin does not score against the Islanders, every time he has the puck, people are going to be paying close attention to number eight.
Right. You bring up a good point about the Capitals. I mean, yes, they won the Stanley Cup in 2018. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, where kind of the joke every spring was, hey, cherry blossoms are gone, so are the Caps. It was just how they did in the playoffs. That's their historical, other than that one Stanley Cup year, historically falling short in the postseason with all the talent those teams have had. I mean, hey, I remember even saying to my husband, wow, you know, ever since the Capitals have won the Stanley Cup in 2018, I think I saw a stat where they haven't won a first round series in the years they've been in the playoffs since then as well. You know, this is, you know, with one of the league's marquee players as well too. I mean, they've had some really good players on those teams also. I did ask Beck Malenstein this morning, you know, what it's like to see his former teammate, because Malenstein played for the Capitals with Alex Ovechkin, to see him play. And he goes, you know, he said one of the things that stands out about Ovechkin, though, is he's a guy who doesn't just get excited when he scores goals. When he sees his teammates scoring, yep, you know, scoring goals as well, he's leading the proverbial wave with them. You know, it's kind of the rising tide, you know, lifts up all ships theory as well, too. Does that kind of team, and how excited he gets for just the act of goal scoring. And I think it's also when you look at 900 goals, reaching the 900 goal mark, and he was what, the number one pick in 2004. It's a testament to longevity in a sport that's not very forgiving when it comes to lengthy careers. You know, how long is the average NHL career now?
They always say in football 3.7 years. I think the average NHL career, a little longer. Guys can start at 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly not 20, 21 years or anything close to it either. I don't even think – it's not even double figures. And here we are, Ovechkin, going all the way back from the previous lockout all the way to now in 2025. His longevity is as remarkable as his achievement.
Right. Him, Sidney Crosby, you know, who just hit the 1,700 point mark in what is 21st NHL season. It was funny. I was looking at something. It was like they said Wayne Gretzky was like, I think, 10 NHL seasons. But Wayne is in his own world. He's in a different era as well, too. But it's a testament to the longevity of some of these players as well. You know, you always look around. There's always one guy, too, who's like, wow, I didn't know he was still in the league. Matt Duchene was one of those guys, too. But that's one thing I'd love to find out. How do these guys stick around? How do they take care of themselves? How do they manage their sleep and their nutrition and whatnot? You know, how does Alex Ovechkin do it? You know, they don't do it with, like, you know, off seasons of beer and golf anymore. These guys, it's a year-round job for them.
Well, Ovechkin, you know, he has had his fun.
He's had a few beers. Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
We've seen pictures of him in Washington after the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I think of a guy we just saw with Colorado, Brett Burns, who came over from Carolina this year, who's an Ironman in his 40s, and I think is the last player left in the league who played before the lockout in 2004-05. And he's playing a regular shift for a potential Stanley Cup team. He did it last year in Carolina. He's doing it now in Colorado. And it's an amazing thing to see. And you say the same thing. How does this guy on defense keep his body where it is? And that's where Ovechkin really stands out. He has been very durable in his career. It was ironic. Last year, his season got derailed when he had the leg fracture.
A month or so.
But he got the record against the Islanders. He's going to go for it against the Islanders again Friday night. And then we'll see Saturday if it's still in play when they come to meet the Sabres.
All right, we got a lot to look forward to in the next two games, and then they roll in, you know, starting their next 10 games of, you know, first 10. They got the first 10 of the way. Sabres start the next 10 on Thursday and Saturday. So we'll see how everything unfolds. Any other closing thoughts you want to add about going into the weekend and going into November for the Sabres?
Well, just the one closing thought I have is peer ahead to next week just a little. What's happening on Tuesday night? Utah Mammoth. J.J. Paterka returned to KeyBank Center. That will be a highlight game for the entire month and for next week. You know, every week is busy with this Olympic schedule, but the Utah Mammoth lost to Edmonton on Tuesday when they were number one in the Western Conference going into that game. They got off to an 8-2 start. Paterka's having a nice run. It'll just be interesting to see him with that team, see what he has to say, since we've never talked to him since the trade, and just see how that team looks, because they're one of the early surprises. I did pick them to be a wild card in the playoffs. Right now, they look like more than a wild card in the Western Conference, so that'll be something to look forward to as well.
Right, that week, and then the next week, the first big road trip for the Sabres, November 8th or 15th. Carolina, at Utah, at Colorado, and at Detroit. You know, it's going to be, you know, they don't have these one-offs anymore. They got to pack their bags and hit the road and see how they play, you know, in different arenas and at higher altitudes.
And certainly Utah, an incredible fan base. We've seen already in 1 year, an incredible arena. Colorado, same thing, difficult places to play. But yeah, they're going to play Utah twice in about 10 days, seeing J.J. Paterka. So that'll certainly be an interesting challenge for the Sabres.
All right, we got a lot to look forward to in November. We're going to wrap this one up here. I'm Rachel Lindsay, cover the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News.
Mike Harrington, news sports columnist. Eyes on the World Series as well as the Sabres. I've been a little back and forth here in the month of October. We'll have to see how this one goes with the Blue Jays and Dodgers. But the Sabres certainly, they're off to a decent start, and they're in the mix. That's all you can ask at this point. Stay in the mix.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate you taking the time. And find us on www.buffalonews.com.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at expresswindowsinc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.